On this episode of The Playbook, I have Ramon Castillon, president of Row House, and we're going to talk about synchronicity. Synchronicity like a row team and how that is utilized in the art of negotiation. You will learn all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have Ramon Castillon. That's right, it rhymes, and he's just teaching me my Spanish 101 here in The Playbook studio. He is the president of Row House, which is a fitness phenomenon, and we're going to get into that. But like every great entrepreneur, I want to get a little bit of backstory, Ramon. You're not your normal American entrepreneur. How did you get into the entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me.
Oh, of course.
For me, so we were sharing a little bit earlier, both my parents are from Mexico, they were migrant farm workers. I mean, I watched them grind and grind and grind for years growing up. And for me, it was to watch them work so hard. I felt a responsibility to try to make very good use of the opportunities that they put in front of me. And so when I entered the workforce for the first time, just right out of college, I went into finance and I really enjoyed it, had a great time. But the one thing that really stood out to me was I felt like I was just making decisions about companies versus actually building companies up. And so from there, that kind of led me down this track of, hey, I want to build something. And so I went the traditional route and found opportunities at some bigger corporations. But even then, I just felt like something was missing. I felt like I was not outside my comfort zone. It was always, you know, you had a specific responsibility, you did that, okay, what's the next thing I need to do? And you always felt like you were on this track. And so I wanted to...
And where did school fall into that beyond the business side of it? You know, how important was your education? I mean, coming from, you know, immigrants, and,
yeah,
you know, my family as well, education was, you know, so important.
Yeah.
I had a single mom that work like an immigrant, you know, coming into yeah. this country. And I learned my work ethic the same way. My mom yeah. working two jobs, packing my dinner into a station wagon and all the things that she yeah. did to keep food on the table.
Yep.
Really, I can't teach my children. You know, I can't teach them what I experienced. But
right.
where did education fall in for you?
For me, it was just watching my parents. I mean, they worked so hard
yeah.
To give me opportunity. And I didn't want to waste that opportunity.
So not a big fan of college or law school or business school, or did you?
No, education was really important to them.
Okay.
It was. You know, it was very important to them. They didn't have an opportunity to go down that traditional track and they wanted to provide a better life for their son. And so that's one thing that from day one they prioritized. And so they were able to get me into a good high school, and that high school provided me an opportunity to go to a great school.
Yeah.
And for me, it was, you know, I wanted to make good use of that. And so, that was for them, that was the biggest gift that they could give me. It wasn't a ton of money. It wasn't, anything other than, hey, we want to provide you an opportunity to do whatever it is you want to do. I mean, what was really interesting was like when I went to college, I didn't have a great sound. I didn't have a ton of sounding boards. It wasn't like I could go talk to like a relative that had gone right. to college or something.
You were
like that.
First generation.
Yeah, first generation. And so you get there and all you know is you're either supposed to be a lawyer, a doctor, or like an engineer.
Right.
It's one of those three
things.
I always
say doctor, lawyer, failure. That's
yeah.
how I grew up.
Yeah.
So I get that. And I think it's important for people to know, you know, that I sit on some admissions boards and help with both college and law school. And one of the biggest criteria for success is that a lot of universities look for first generation students
yep.
as regardless of your socioeconomic background, which
right.
is, you know, looked upon more than anything, like to be a first generation because of you don't have anywhere to go and
yeah.
to be able to excel without all the situational knowledge and relationship capital that your parents had because they went to Harvard or
yep.
USC or wherever else.
Yeah. They want to bring people to the school that have a different opinion.
Initiative too.
Yeah, that they challenge their peer groups around them. Like that's what they're trying to figure out is like, how do I create the best possible student body?
Yeah.
And so it was a huge one for us. And, you know, what was unique for me was, I think early on in college was when I started realizing I was a bird of a different feather. I remember calling up my mother and just being like, look, I don't think I'm going to be a doctor. I was doing the math.
I've made that call.
Yeah. I was like doing the math. I was like, okay, 4 years of college. How much time going to med school and
how much money?
What's this residency thing that we're talking about? And I was like just doing the math quick, and I was like, am I going to be like 40 before this is all
said? Pay off your loans, yeah.
Yeah. So I called my mother up and I said, you know, I took this course. I found it really interesting. Economics. It was Econ 101.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I'm going to become an econ major, Mom. And she goes, that's good. I heard econ majors can be doctors. And
oh,
I was
really?
Like, yeah, I was
that's
like,
so good.
I was like, no, that's not my point of this phone call. But ever since then, I realized that I gravitated towards just understanding business, and I gravitated towards understanding people. Like that was something that I felt like always was something that made me different versus everyone around me. I really felt like I understood people. I understood.
What do you think is more important, understanding people or understanding the economic side of the business?
I think they're both related. That's why mm-hmm. there's this whole field called behavioral economics now. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was still very traditional economics, but now behavioral economics has become a bigger thing. It's being taught in schools. You can read a lot about it. And so I think the both go hand in hand. But I think it's like if you're going to say which of the two you're trying to prioritize, it's people. I mean,
People buy from people.
Yeah.
People buy on emotion. Which
it's
is
about relationships.
Not taught. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many times in my life where my relationships have been what has allowed me to move forward. You know, for me, there's a couple of things I always prioritize. One is always treat people with respect. Like that's a big role for me. Like it doesn't matter how they treat you. And I got that from my dad. Like my dad only saw the good in people. And for me, that's kind of how I look at it. It's like, I'm going to try to only see the good in people. And I'm going to try to treat you that way. The other thing for me is try to look at things from their side. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but try to understand where they're coming from. If you do those two things, if you treat people with respect and you really try to understand where they're coming from, that helps you understand how to move something forward, because you can't do it by yourself. There's absolutely no way that you can get anything done by yourself, anything big by yourself. You really need the community to help you do that. And that's always been a big thing for me is those two things. And that's kind of how I've functioned, whether it be early on when I was in finance or I had a stint where I worked for a big box operator. And then from there, I went and took on full-blown entrepreneurship. It was I went and scaled a boutique brand from one location to five. And I knew nothing about scaling anything. Like we did everything from like, oh my gosh, we got to build a gym. Do you know anything about real estate? Do you know anything about architects? Do you know anything about contractors? No. Okay, fine. I'll go figure it out. And so now you're interacting with brokers, lawyers, architects, GCs, and the way that I was able to kind of close that knowledge gap was by saying, look, I don't know, I'm not going to act like I know everything about your field, but I'm going to come to you and treat you with respect. I'm going to be humble about it. And I'm going to try to see things from your end. And I'm just going to try to figure out how we can make this work so there's a win-win.
When you're in that situation, how much were you manipulated? You know, what I found is when people, even if we treat people with respect, that when we're dealing with architects and doctors, lawyers and contractors,
yeah,
that there's a lot of room for overselling, back-end selling, yeah, manipulation and lying.
Yeah.
And that there's a huge risk, and the biggest risk of not knowing how to scale.
Yep.
You know, and I always say my law degree is so beneficial because I can see that side of it, even though I don't practice law, right? I took the bar because my mom made me.
Yep.
Literally, my concern when I hear you talk about that is, all right, man, did they take advantage of you?
Yeah. You know, that's something that what I'm thankful for is you have this kind of like, I have to make sure that I assume the best, but also know that everyone always often has their self-interest. There's always like an ulterior motive.
Right.
And you learn that in finance, right? There's a buyer and there's a seller. So you that
yes,
that
you do learn that.
Yeah. And so I think that stuck with me anytime that I would deal with lawyers or architects or GCs or you're signing a contract. And I would be very upfront, actually. That was something that I would tackle right from the very beginning. Is a lot of the times I would be like, hey, what's your motive? Let's figure this out. And because I have my I cut to the chase. Yeah. Like, and that's always been something that ingrained in my DNA is I don't see the point of living in the gray. I'd rather just say like, look, at the end of the day, I need to give, you need to give. I get that.
Right.
I'm going to let you know what my non-negotiables are. You let me know what your non-negotiables are from the very beginning. And if they don't align from the very beginning, then let's just not waste our time.
It's interesting you say that because one of the strategies that I teach is halfway point. And so halfway point basically is a transparent way of negotiation which says, okay, here's my non-negotiables, here's your non-negotiables, here's our agreeables.
Right.
We just circle the agreeables.
Right.
On the non-negotiables, instead of wasting time, let's figure out the halfway point for each.
Yeah.
Does that sound fair?
Yep.
And you will save millions of dollars, millions of dollars of time, emotional. Yep. The trust is there. Everybody knows, you know, where I have seen negotiations, especially in the sports, billions of dollars of negotiation last for months and years and cost everyone millions because of ego, not math.
Yep.
And guess where it ended up? At the halfway point.
Yep.
All the non-negotiables offered the half, and halfway point could be, I'll give you this, you give me that, and that's a halfway point. Or here's the two competing, you know, things, we'll meet at 50%.
Yep.
It's very simple. And I think I rarely meet someone who has articulated here on the playbook that, you know, I just am very straightforward. I don't want to waste time.
Yeah.
And it's just maybe because of the econ background.
Yeah.
You know, it's just math to you.
Yeah.
And you have seemed to extract the emotion out of it with respect and humility.
Yeah.
Two of the superpowers that I think that you have.
Yes. Someone recently told me that I think about things very linearly, which is like, it's very simple to me. There's like here to there. Like, I know there can be a lot that can happen between, but like, let's just... We know where we're trying to get to. Let's just try to get there in the most efficient manner that we both feel like we can have a respect for each other. Because at the end of the day, we're in a relationship if we make an agreement of some type. So let's try to feel like we made a good agreement so then we can focus on the execution piece of it. You know, what's something you talked about, how do you avoid being taken advantage of?
Yes.
Look, you're going to miss things. That's inevitable. I think that's, for me, a big reason why I decided to be a little bit more riskier with my career, is that one of my favorite quotes I have is Mike Tyson's quote is, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think it's so spot on, is like, you have to be willing to get punched in the mouth. Because it isn't until that happens that you then realize, oh my gosh, like, this is what it's really like. Now I need to start making adjustments. And that means my willingness to take riskier paths and my willingness to make mistakes was huge in my ability to just get better faster. And that's something that was a big reason why I transitioned from kind of in this typical corporate setting that I was talking about early on to more of this like entrepreneur. Because for me, I was like, I want to get to a point where in a very short period of time, I can take the biggest punch in the mouth and I can figure out what do I need to do next.
You're still standing.
But the only way that you can do that is just putting yourself out there and experience stuff. Like, I have this other saying is like, you're never going to see in a military battle some hotshot being the general. Mm-hmm. It's always an older individual that has seen stuff.
Yeah, of course.
And there's a reason for that. You have to have seen something to actually know how to lead.
Right. And I think that's part of the problem with the acceleration and growth of the technology, that we handle so much processing and data in such a short amount of time that we've lost the gray hairs.
Yep.
Because, you know, I'm one of the people in America that have the most technology background, and I started in 92.
Yep.
right?
Yep.
And, you know, the first smartphone in the world, and before they had cell phones. Well, that's a really short amount of time compared to like General Washington, you know, that had been in the military for 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really interesting thing. Now, Row House is in a very crowded space, but has unique opportunity and a unique value proposition.
Yep.
And you're, you know, the driving force as president.
Yep.
What are some of the key distinctive properties, and how do you educate the market when you're in a crowded market and here you have a unique proposition?
Yeah. Well, I think the market's already hanging there. So I've said this before, the consumer is always getting smarter every day. And a great example is 10 years ago, if you went to a restaurant and you looked at a menu, there were two things you didn't see: calories and whether something was vegan. Now you go to a restaurant and those things are on there. And I think that speaks to just how much smarter the consumer is getting. And that applies also to their fitness routine. So
as soon as they realize that calories is a measurement of energy.
Yeah.
Right. I think the world will change.
Yeah.
Because knowing calories is important, but it's definitely not the distinctive, you know, criteria to be healthy. But go ahead.
And that's what you're starting to see. So you're starting to get people that are realizing, look, I need to live a healthy lifestyle. I want to live as long as I possibly can.
And as well.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Not even long. Like, people want to live well.
Exactly. And so it's like, now I don't eat as much meat as I used to, right? Like, you have Beyond Meat, you have
Impossible Burgers.
Impossible Burger. Like, you go to Carl's Jr. and it's like, they're talking about that. McDonald's just in Beyond Meat.
Yeah, we went in, all of us, to Burger King on our road trip. We're all trying the plant burger.
So to your point about living well, what has happened is you've gone through this whole stretch where people are like, I need to work out. I'm super busy. I need to be very effective with my workouts. And everyone went down this path of high intensity, high impact.
Yeah.
And that wasn't sustainable. People were like, okay, I'm healthier. I feel better. I have more energy, but I hurt. There's got to be,
injured.
Yeah. There's got to be some option out there that I can continue to still burn calories, work on strength, and not destroy my body. And so you're starting to see the market go, okay, what options are out there? And there aren't many that have as big a lead as we do. And so you're starting to get people that are saying, rowing, let me learn about rowing. Oh my gosh, rowing's been around for a really long time. That's really interesting.
It's a full body sport.
Yeah, it's a full body sport. Did you know that it was the first intercollegiate sport? It's been part of every Olympics. It's like people start going, there's a book written about it, Boys in the Boat. They're going to make a movie about it. Okay, well, let me see what this is all about. And what we really-
also, like, I mean, flexibility. You know, it incorporates so much. Rowing, such a holistic exercise, and that's probably why it's been around for so long.
Yeah, and then you think about what makes rowing very unique, which is the team aspect. You can't have a boat win a race if everyone's just doing whatever,
right?
Everyone has to row in sync, and so we take those attributes and we incorporate that in our studio and we bring that to life. So, someone is, I need to live a more active lifestyle. I want to do something that's smart for me. Let me go and try Row House. They walk in, they still get a really great experience with a good coach, good music, technology, all that stuff. But then the one thing that really brings it home for them is we all worked together. There was this unique, synchronized experience that we still felt like we had our own individual workout, but we were still a team. And that, for us in a crowded space, has really helped differentiate ourselves. So we're ahead of the curve in terms of being prepared for where people are going, which is workouts that don't destroy my body. And we've done a really good job of leveraging the sport of rowing to create an experience in the studio, because what you're going to find is, I think you're getting a lot of people that are going to be like, okay, we need to do something that's low impact. And they're going to introduce a piece of cardio that's low impact, but it's going to be a boot camp. It's not going to be an experience. It's just going to be what everyone has experienced before, versus what we're finding in our studios. People are coming in. They're like, this is something I can really get behind and I can do every single day and I can continue to get better and better and better. Oh, and by the way, we can be part of the boat. So everyone becomes a crew, and now you've got the community and everyone, that's the motivation, the accountability. So yeah, I mean, it's a crowded space, but I go to sleep every night knowing that I feel that we've really have decided to do something different. And that's the key when you're trying to roll out a product, is you wanna do something that people don't realize they need just yet. right? And that's how I feel. That's what I feel like we've been able to accomplish with Row House, is that we got so far ahead with what people were starting to be like, oh, I should do more rowing. And now, you know, I'm pretty excited about this year because I feel like it's all coming full circle. I mean, you're seeing in magazines, great example. Have you seen the Navy Federal Credit Union commercial where the two ladies are rowing?
Yes.
When were you ever going to see that?
Right.
Right? Like,
so good.
Now it's on a commercial.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, huh, okay. So Navy Federal Credit Union, which is growing quickly, trying to create a competitive position with USAA, did their market research and realized that a good commercial would be to have two ladies talking about their financial well-being on rowers.
Right. Good sign.
Yeah.
Last question, you know, I believe coming from the immigrant side of things,
yeah,
that we get extraordinary advice. In fact, the best piece of advice that I've got was from my grandfather, who sold, you know, tires in the back of a truck,
yeah,
during the Depression, came over from Russia.
Yeah.
And, you know, he told me you only need three things in life to be happy. One, you need a job that you love. Two, you need a liaison or your intimate partner that you love, because she'll be the liaison between everybody in your intimate family. And then the best bed you can find, because you spend a third of your life sleeping and shtupping, he said, which you can figure that out in Russian. So those are just three simple things in life and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
Which ironically changed my life, because that third of the life sleeping really put a hyper focus on me that people don't pay attention to sleep. So I started studying sleep, getting a sleep mentor, taking advantage of the subconscious and unconscious well-being while I'm just sleeping. And now I have increased my entire life because I don't need to sleep as much as other people, and I have way more energy and inspiration than them.
Yep.
What advice like that did you get from your parents?
Be present.
What does that mean to you?
So you and I are talking. Like, one of the first things I did when I came down was I put my phone away and put on Do Not Disturb. It's right now I'm thinking about talking to you. When I sit down with one of my team members, it's a conversation with them. When I'm at home with my son and my wife, it's about being with them. That's if you're not present and you're distracted, you're giving 50% of what you could to that person. And so that was something that I got taught by my parents early on, is that you've got one life. The moment you're born, the clock starts ticking. If you're distracted, you're going to go through the whole time feeling, you're going to reflect back and go, what happened? I don't remember. And so for me, it was to be present. And that's, don't trust me. It's not like I'm perfect at it, right?
No,
it's like, it's a constant battle.
Yeah.
But it's something that every morning when I wake myself up, that's the first thing I think about is, be present. And that's applied to everything. If I go and I work out, like, I'm working out, like that's what I'm trying to focus on. If I'm going to breakfast with my family, it's breakfast with my family. If I'm talking to an owner or whomever, it's like I'm focused on that. And so I try to work on that all the time.
But
that
was, I love it.
Definitely
that's,
something.
That ties into my student of the calendar, where I study with a lens of productivity and accessibility, and doing things now keeps me present.
Yeah.
Right? Can I do it right now? If so, do it.
Right.
Like being present in this interview. And there's no doubt why you're successful, no doubt why the Row House will be successful.
Yeah.
There is a common thread of values that exist that we've inherited, luckily, from great generations of hard work, smart work, and long work. Honesty, integrity, humility are some superpowers that you definitely have. And if you haven't listened to this, go back, because if you're a young entrepreneur, you can see that there are no overnight successes, that it's just a matter of consistent, persistent pursuit. And young Ramon Castillon here, president of the Row House, is a classic example of that. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneur the Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making the Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with the Playbook.